Our scripture reading this morning comes from the book of Ruth. Let us listen. In the days when the judges rule, there was a famine in the land, and a certain man in Bethlehem in Judah went to live in the country of Moab, he and his wife and two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife, Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. Her two sons took Moabite wives, and the name of those were Orpah, and the other was named Ruth. When they had lived there for about 10 years, both of Naomi's sons died. So the woman was left without her two sons and without her husband. Then she started to return with her daughters-in-law from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had considered his people and had given them food. So she set out from that place where she had been living, she and her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way back to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with me and the dead." But Ruth, her daughter-in-law, said, "Do not press me to leave you or to turn from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There I will be buried. May the Lord do thus and so to me, and more as well, if even death parts me from you." When Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to Naomi. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Call me no longer Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has dealt harshly with me, and the Almighty has brought calamity on me?" So Naomi returned together with Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, who came back with her from the country of Moab, and they lived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Hear what the Spirit is saying.
I want to say a word of thanks to Pastor Teresa. A week ago, Thursday, I began not feeling well, and my voice went Friday, left me Friday, and Saturday all morning, I told Jane that my voice would be back soon because I'm invulnerable and immortal, and I always get my voice back before I need to preach. So I put it off till the last minute. I called Teresa at the very last minute and asked if she could preach the next day. She had to put her dancing clothes back in the closet. She was getting ready to go out dancing, as young associates can do on Saturday night. And she worked on a sermon, and she came, and she presented the word in a very, very effective and powerful way. So thank you, Teresa. Pastor Dawn spent last Sunday with our youth on a ski trip, so we're grateful to her for taking a Sunday to invest in our young people. I want to say a word of thanks to this congregation. On an impulse, the week before Christmas, when Reverend Frank Schaefer was defrocked for having done his same son's same-sex wedding, I called him up and asked him if he would come here to Foundry and preach the following Sunday, because I thought he might need some encouragement, and I might need some encouragement. I also asked this congregation if you would give a love offering to support the Schaefer family, who, because he was defrocked, were losing their source of income. One of the most distressing things when a group of us were at the trial, one of the most distressing things for me was the argument by the prosecution that the penalty for conducting his son's same-sex wedding should be so serious enough that other ministers, other clergy would take the lesson and not do the same thing ever. And of course, the most extreme thing that they could do was to take away Frank's income, and they did. His income ended effective the day he was defrocked, so I ask you as a congregation to give a love offering to help them through the transition. The total offering that we received to support the Schaefer family is $29,864.03. So thank you. Almost 20,000 came from the actual offerings that you put in our offering plates on Sunday, December 22nd. The rest we received almost another 10,000 over the internet, including contributions that you made over the internet, as well as the word got out, contributions came in from throughout the country from 21 states. So we appreciate this outpouring of love. It is a message that is being heard throughout the country as people to attempt to punish clergy for faithful ministry. And it's a testimony that we as a church will not let people who are faithful in their ministries suffer. One of the themes of our service in 2 weeks, when Frank comes back and when we have Beth Stroud, who was defrocked because she was in a covenanted relationship with her partner as a pastor, and Jimmy Creech, who was defrocked in the late 1990s as a result of conducting a same gender wedding, and also Bishop, special guest Bishop Melvin Talbert, who conducted a retired bishop who conducted a same gender wedding in Alabama not long ago. They'll all be here, and we're going to affirm pastors who are practicing faithful ministry to all God's people. And we invite you to bring your friends for that special service. I'm very grateful for your support of the Schaefer family. This past week, Bishop Jack Toole died. Bishop Toole was a bishop in the Pacific Northwest area of our United Methodist Church. Before he was elected bishop, he was a person who helped put the language about GLBTQ people and about homosexuality in the Book of Discipline. When he realized the consequences of what was happening to people as a result of that language, he publicly repented of his participation in that and became one of our leading bishops working to help the church become truly inclusive. So please keep the Toole family in your prayers and say a word of thanks for Bishop Toole's witness. We want to look at some of the old stories in the Bible, especially stories of strength and weakness from the Old Testament. Because these are our stories. They help to shape who we are. We can't understand the church. We can't understand our lives in the world and who we are called to be and what we are called to do as Christians in our time and place, unless we understand the stories that shaped Jesus, that shaped the people of Israel, that shaped the church in the beginning. This story is from the time of the judges in Israel. Before Israel decided to have a king, Israel was a very, very loose confederation of tribes. There was no central legislature. There was no central executive branch. Just 12 tribes of related people who together were called Israel. And each tribe had its own leader. It was actually just a part-time position, and the leader was called a judge. The judge had two primary tasks. The judge's work was to resolve, decide on, judge disputes between families within the tribe when they were otherwise unable to be resolved. And the other work of the judge was to organize a volunteer army if there was a military threat against any one of the tribes of Israel. During the time of the judges, as happened with some regularity in the ancient world in one place or another, a famine hit Israel. During a time of famine, and this is still true today, people do whatever they need to do to survive. There was a man who lived in the town of Bethlehem, in the region of Judea, named Elimelech, who was married to a woman named Naomi, and they had two young sons named Mahlon and Chilion. Elimelech and Naomi did what they needed to do to survive in a time of famine. They moved to the country of Moab, where there was food. Now, this may have been a difficult thing for them to do because the Israelites as a people hated the Moabites more than any other group of people on the face of the earth, maybe even more than the Egyptians who had enslaved them. The Israelites had a centuries-long resentment against the Moabites for denying them food when they were in the wilderness on their journey to the promised land. They blamed the Moabites because even though the Moabites had plenty of food to share in abundance, they would have allowed the Israelites to starve to death in the wilderness rather than to share with them. It was like this. Years ago, I knew a Yugoslavian United Methodist pastor, which was very unusual because the number of United Methodists in the region of the former Yugoslavia is about the same size as the membership of this congregation. He wrote a book about the failure of the Yugoslavian experiment called Yugoslavian Inferno. The Yugoslavian experiment had been an experiment of bringing together different ethnic groups, all of whom lived within the same region of Southeast Europe, and for them to live together as a nation, to work together in places of employment, regardless of their ethnic background, to take people who had traditionally been hostile toward one another, and the experiment was to see if they could live together as one fruitful, successful nation in which everyone would be better off as a result of working together. And this Yugoslavian pastor, who was very sad about the failure of the experiment of Yugoslavia, said the reason that it failed was, in his opinion, that people in the nation did everything together except for two things. He said, on Saturday night, in every village and in every neighborhood, in every city, in every rural community, people of the same ethnicity would come together on a Saturday night to drink with each other. And as they drank with each other in separate ethnic groups, while they were drinking, they would begin to rehearse 500-year-old grievances of one ethnic group against the other. And by the end of the night, when they had drunk enough, it was as though the 500-year grievances had happened the day before, and they would go home from drinking furious at the other ethnicities. And then he said on Sunday morning, they would get up and they would go to their different houses of worship where they worshiped in separate ethnic groupings. And during worship and their prayers, they would sort of reinforce their grievances 500 years old as though it had happened yesterday in their prayer and their worship. And by the time they got back to their integrated workplaces on Monday morning, they hated each other. That's how it was in Israel with the Moabites. When the Israelites would drink together on Friday night, they would begin to rehearse their hundreds and hundreds of years old resentment against the Moabites. And by the time Saturday morning Sabbath worship came, they were cursing the Moabites as part of their prayers. Israel even passed a law, and they put the law in the Bible. You know, Israel had a very tough, firm, strong law called the Law of the Aliens, or the Law in Hebrew of the Gers. And it said that people who were not Israelites, who were aliens, needed to be treated with a special welcome, special hospitality, special justice for those who were aliens in the land of Israel, because it said, remember, you were once aliens in the land of Egypt, and you were not treated well. So you need to make sure that any aliens, any outsiders within your nation are treated especially well. And after they wrote that law, sometimes later, after they had been drinking together and praying, they wrote an amendment to that law. And the amendment written in Deuteronomy 23, verse 3 says, no Moabite shall be admitted to the assembly of the Lord. Yes, we're going to treat aliens well, except if they're Moabites. No Moabite shall be admitted to the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of their descendants shall be admitted to the assembly of the Lord, because they did not meet you with food and water on your journey out of Egypt. 500, 600, 700-year-old grievances became as though they had happened yesterday. But during a famine, you do what you need to do. And if your family is hungry and there's food in Moab, even though your people hate the Moabites, you move your wife Naomi and your sons Mahlon and Chilion from Bethlehem of Judea in Israel to Moab. After they had lived in Moab for a time, Elimelech died. Naomi's sons married Moabite women. In those days, most women were dependent upon men to provide for them. They had no way to have an income. They had no way to have food or housing without a male relative. Even though her husband had died, Naomi was okay because she had two sons to provide for her, until a decade later when her two sons died. Suddenly, Naomi found herself alone, an Israelite woman with no husband and no sons, only two daughters-in-law, and they were Moabites in the land of Moab. She believed that God had cursed her. Thus, the aria that Pam sang, I used to be full, but now I am empty. After the funerals, Naomi sat down with her daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. Naomi told them that she was returning to Israel in the hope that some distant relative might take her in as a servant, although she was really too old and too weak to be much help. She was hoping that someone might take care of her. It seemed her best option to her out of many bad options. Naomi told Orpha and Ruth to go home to their parents' houses and find new husbands while they were still young enough to get married again, because a woman without a man was vulnerable, susceptible to all sorts of abuse, and without a way to live. This was the only practical, sensitive thing for them to do, Naomi told her daughters-in-law. They wept together, the three women who had lived together for a decade, shared the same household for a decade, taking care of each other for a decade. Orpha kissed Naomi and did the only thing that made sense. She left Naomi and went back home to find a new husband and a new mother-in-law. Ruth would not leave Naomi. She begged Naomi not to make her go. Then she spoke the words that are such a deep statement of commitment that they have often been repeated in wedding ceremonies. Ruth said to Naomi, "Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God my God. Where you die, I will die. There will I be buried. May the Lord do thus and so to me and more as well, if even death parts me from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." Naomi and Ruth traveled together to Bethlehem of Judea in Israel. They survived by Ruth gleaning. I don't know how many of you know that our junior high youth have a gleaning weekend every summer with the Society of St. Andrews. The Society of St. Andrews is an organization that works with farmers after farmers have had a harvest and there's food left over that the harvesting machines do not pick up. The farmers allow volunteers, often church volunteers, often youth groups, to come and to pick the rest of the crop that was missed by the harvesting machines, and then those crops are distributed to hungry people through feeding programs and food cupboards and other ways that hungry people get food. And this is done voluntarily by farmers who would rather see someone eat their leftover crop than have it go to waste. In the time of Israel, gleaning was a law. It was not a volunteer activity, it was a law. Farmers were allowed to harvest their crops only one time. And whatever they failed to harvest during that one time, poor people, hungry people, were allowed to come into the fields and pick the rest so that they would at least have some food to survive on. As a result of this law that they only had one try at harvesting their crop, farmers had become very proficient at harvesting almost everything the first time, leaving as little left over as possible. So gleaning was hard work, and if you got enough food to survive on, you worked from sunrise to sunset to get it. When Naomi and Ruth arrived in Israel, it was the time of the barley harvest. Ruth was gleaning whatever she could. She came into the fields of a rich farmer named Boaz, who was a relative of her late father-in-law, Elimelech. Even though Moabites were hated, Boaz was kind to Ruth and allowed her to gather more grain than she could have gleaned because he respected her commitment to care for Naomi, for whom she had no obligation. There was another law in Israel at the time called the Law of Levirate Marriage. This is an example of biblical family values. The law of levirate marriage said that if a married man died before his wife had a child, his closest male relative should take the widow as one of his wives and have children with her. Now, surely the law of levirate marriage would not apply to a Moabite woman. An Israelite would not be expected to take a Moabite widow as his levirate wife. But Naomi instructed Ruth to make the levirate claim to Boaz, and Boaz accepted and married her. And Boaz and Ruth had a son, and Naomi moved into their house to live the rest of her life as her grandson's baby nurse. So during the season of Epiphany, we're talking about stories of strength and weakness in the Bible. There is no one as weak as two widowed women in ancient biblical times. Nonetheless, two widowed women of two different nationalities and cultures and religions. But Naomi and Ruth had something that made them strong. Ruth had an absolute and unconditional and impractical love for Naomi. She would not let her go. She would not leave her helpless and alone. She would give up everything, including her family, her nation, even her God, her religion, in order to stay with and support Naomi. In the midst of weakness and vulnerability, Ruth had a powerful and impractical love. And Naomi had another strength, perhaps even a harder one. She had the strength to let Ruth love her, even when she had nothing to give back to Ruth, no way of helping Ruth. She had the strength to let Ruth love her. It says a very interesting thing in the Bible. It says after Naomi tried to send Ruth away to find a new husband, and Ruth made her speech, where you go, I will go, where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, your God, my God. After Ruth makes this commitment vow, it simply says this. When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. Didn't say thank you. Didn't say yes, come, we'll figure it out together. Naomi had no words. But still, she let Ruth love her. It may take as much strength to allow someone to love you as it does to love somebody else. It was Ruth's unconditional love and Naomi's willingness to allow Ruth to love her that saved them and made it possible for them to survive and even to thrive. You know, one of the greatest dangers when things go wrong in our lives, when things go wrong at school, when things go wrong in our job, when things go wrong financially, when things go wrong mentally and emotionally, when our health is under attack, one of the greatest threats is that it begins to drive us away from the people who love us and who are in our lives for us to love. It can drive us away from family and spouses. It can drive us away from our friends. One of the most dangerous things that happens when things go wrong in the environment around us is that it isolates us from the people who love us. And instead of clinging to our loved ones for comfort and encouragement and hope, we become distant, silent, sometimes angry. We don't want to be vulnerable enough when we feel so vulnerable to let somebody else hold on to us. So Naomi and Ruth are a reminder to us that no matter how weak we become in our lives, no matter how threatened, no matter how disadvantaged, no matter how stressed, no matter how under pressure, the greatest strength that we can have is to hold on to somebody who loves us. And to let somebody who loves us hold on to us. At the end of our days, it will not be how much money we made, how far we climbed up the ladder of success. It will not be our reputation that will sustain us. It will be somebody who chooses to love us and someone that we choose to love, and whether we will let them love us even when it seems that we no longer have enough success or money or accomplishment to give something back to them. We don't know what happened to Orpha, the daughter-in-law who left Naomi and went back to find a new husband. Hopefully she did and had a good life. We do know what happened to Ruth. Ruth and Boaz's child was named Obed. Obed grew up and had a son named Jesse. Jesse had a son named David who became Israel's greatest king. Ruth, the Moabite woman who chose to love Naomi rather than to be practical, became the great-grandmother of Israel's greatest king, David. Because he was part Moabite by Israel's own laws, David should never have been allowed to sit in the assembly of the Lord. When God anointed David king, God broke Israel's own laws written right there in the Bible. What the Israelites assumed to be the Lord's own law, God broke when God anointed David, the great-grandchild of a Moabite woman, to be king. And for we who are Christians, especially we who are Gentile Christians, when we read Jesus' genealogy in the Gospel of Matthew, we find listed among all of Jesus' ancestors this Gentile Moabite woman named Ruth. We find that her DNA came to be in Jesus, and we Gentiles understand that Jesus belongs to us too. Listen, when we have no other power, when we failed at work, when we failed financially, when we've failed in the eyes of society, when our health has betrayed us, when everything else has gone, and we have nothing left, when we have no other strength, no other power, we still can choose to love the people that God has put in our life to love and to let them love us. No matter what else the world takes away, we can choose to love and let ourselves be loved, like Naomi and Ruth.